So I got a joke for you at the expense of your wife.
Please do.
How do you know that there's a soprano at the door?
I don't know. Black Market Toast Podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cover, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it as something completely new. This is episode number 57, and this time we are jumping off of Horrible Girl and the Hot Messes, How to Date a Severed Head
EP.
And
we have a special guest.
We actually have a special guest, which is...
A relevant special guest.
Yes. Sometimes we have random special guests, but this one is actually relevant. We actually snagged the horrible girl in question, Miss Amelia.
Hi. Hello.
And we were, it's a local band, and we were going to talk about them. So we said, why don't you come and sit in the room and watch us while we talk about you?
Or we'll come sit in your room and talk about you.
Yeah, so we came to her room and we are going to talk.
Yes.
So we should do that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Talking about what we talk about is usually pretty good.
Yeah, so Horrible Girl in the Hot Mess is a local Greenville band. They're a folk punk band, which is always good. Yeah. I hear folk punk and I think bluegrass for some reason.
Right.
Not quite the same direction here, but
no.
But when you said the roots of that there.
Yeah, when you said originally, I was like, is this kind of like an old man Markley type of like, which is really like bluegrass punk or what is it? But yeah, no, it is. It's sort of kind of a retro, almost kind of 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. like the Gits kind of punk, which was nice.
Every time I listen to it, I hear Riot Girl. 90s Riot Girl stuff. The Julianna Hatfield.
Which is actually the playlist I was listening to all day.
Julianna Hatfield's Throwing Muses, Kristen Hirsch, that kind of stuff. That, may or may not actually be an influence, but I hear it in there. Whether it's due to similar influences being fed in or if it's actually there. But you can jump in anytime you want.
Yeah, totally. Throwing Muses are cool. They're not a huge influence. They're not a conscious one. They're from Rhode Island, actually, which is where my parents are from.
So okay.
That's cool. A lot of Riot Girl, Bikini Kill in particular, mm-hmm. 7 Year Bitch, Rape Revenge, or who are more of a power, violence, crime band. The 80s stuff, like Camper Van Beethoven, The Milkmen for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
The big one is This Bike is a Pipe Bomb, or sort of the band who I was like, okay, these are the people I'm going to rip off.
Okay.
We were trying.
Totally get that, yeah.
Well, I like this sound, so let's do that.
Well, it's like, I would love to be able to play that, like, real pretty, like, soulful country, but when I write those songs, they don't come out sounding like that, so it's kind of like, all right, this will work. We'll just throw punk on it, and that means messy.
Yeah,
it always worked for me, because I'm not, the best musician in the world, so whenever I played something, just to play it dirtier always worked for me.
You were a violinist, a college-educated violinist. What do you mean you can't play the pretty music?
I spent all my time playing the violin. I play guitar in my spare time.
Okay, so, your guitar playing.
Yeah, my guitar playing is very dirty, because I spent all my time having violin lessons.
Yeah, so you're riding dirty on the violin. Okay.
I can ride dirty on the violin.
What does that even mean?
Playing riding dirty on the violin. That's exactly what it means.
So maybe some Italian sonatas and stuff like that. Maybe.
Yeah. We always just would mess around and play stupid stuff off the radio.
Mm-hmm.
We did we played one show with Metallica and that was fun.
We
played Metallica at a proper concert.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it got a huge response. We wrote the song out in parts. We had a guitar player, which was cool. But the guitar solos were played on the violin.
What?
And so it was... I have to remember.
Because remembering is hard.
Yes, remembering is hard. So y'all talk about something real quick and I will tell you. Because this was 16 years ago.
discovered that Wayne can play Master of Puppets on guitar. Our bass player,
yeah,
who's sleeping right now. He
nice.
Can play. I was like, oh, cool. Let's start a Metallica cover and being completely facetious.
Yeah, we thought we may have the whole crew, but we just have Amelia for now.
Yeah.
And if other people
may have drop ins in the next little bit.
Looks like Shelby messaged me, so it looks like she's not free before 6 today.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Oh, well.
Yeah. And Wayne, I can go kick his door in later.
Yeah, yeah. That go take care of your. Yeah, I knew Shelby. I've known Shelby for a while. Just finally met her within the last year, but I've known her Facebook for a while, basically through my wife. And your bass player has been my pizza delivery guy for a couple years now, and didn't. I was watching the WSBF the live show for the first time. And I went, their bass player he's the side door guy. He's the guy that comes to the side door and brings the pizzas, and he's playing Rancid. And, you know, and so I came to that realization. I'm like, I sent Shelby a message. I'm like, holy shit, your bass player's playing pizza delivery.
Yeah, I remember
he came
and hung out at a practice that one time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were like, he was like, you.
Yeah, and I've ordered pizza since then, and he came and delivered it, and the social contract between person ordering and pizza delivery person is kind of messed up now, so it was kind of an awkward thing. Where it's like, you know, if he just showed up and then he wasn't delivering a pizza, I'd be like, hey, yeah, come on in, man, let's hang out. But he was there with the pizza, and when the guy shows up with the pizza, you take the pizza and you send them on their way. And he kind of said hi, and I kind of said, hey, thanks for the pizza. And I don't know if... I don't know how the social contract works now.
No, it's like when I worked at a restaurant and my friends came in.
Yeah.
Like, I know I want to talk to you guys, but I also have like these two other tables that I'm
gonna Yeah, exactly. Like when I was a waitress. Like,
I'm understanding you're gonna tip me well, but they're probably gonna tip me better. I love y'all, but
yeah, right. Like I'd have friends come in on brunch, and like, yeah, you know, they'd like be really well intentioned, but they'd like order a bunch of drinks and stuff. I'm like, so great, now I have to run to the bar, like, guys. Okay, bye.
Yeah, because you don't want to blow your friends off, but then again, you can't just sit there and talk to them all the time either.
Yeah, we're not that close. There's no blowing off going to happen.
Well,
I mean, yeah, just acquaintances, yeah, barely. You know. Yeah, that comes much further down the line.
Yeah.
I mean, once in a while, you got to blow off an acquaintance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah. Over spring break, my daughter was on spring break, and she was free, and I was like, you know, local bands, you can't really take a 14-year-old to see local bands at the bars.
No,
you can't get in, literally. So I was like, hey, you know, she's into music, she would enjoy coming and watching you guys, and I reached out, and they're like, okay, and I was like, okay. And we came and hung out and nice. Watched them play through their tour set.
Yeah, and Wayno's itty bitty little dirty bedroom
with the mattress up against the window.
Just a big floor space. It's a happy coincidence.
I was like, okay, well, it's making a floor space. It's also probably dampening the sound so the neighbors don't complain too
That's
much.
True.
Actually, so over where Wayne lives at Grandma's house, we do have shows there all the time. And we have had not a single situation where the cops have been called, where the neighbors have complained. The only complaint we've had is we had one show we played with a art contest originally from Greenwood, but from Athens now.
Uh-huh.
And they came in and they brought, like, there was 50 people in this little, like, itty-bitty two-bedroom mill house. And there were 50 people there.
Yeah.
And the only issue was that some people were parking in front of the neighbor's driveway. And that's the only problem we've ever had. That neighborhood is awesome.
You were saying that you know, there'd be, you know, music playing a couple doors down anyway.
Yeah.
And it, you know, hip-hop one direction, friggin' salsa the other direction, and it... Just seems like a general musical neighborhood.
Yeah, it's really musical. when the person who lives there, Andrew, or Grandma, the night they moved in, he and I were just like hanging out on the front porch, and there's like all this like Tejano mariachi and salsa music coming from like two houses down. So we're like dancing out on the front porch. Like, it was really picturesque and stuff. And we're like, yep, this is the right neighborhood for this house. This is where this needs to be.
This works. This is fine. And old Milazzo's work great for punk shows, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the acoustics are actually pretty good.
You
get kind of the older, more wooden, you know, feel to it. So yeah, it would work good.
A little bit of reverb built in.
Yeah.
The nice spot out here is it's got the carpet, so it dampens it a little dampen bit, so you don't have all the everything bouncing off the wall. Yeah. And like, so it turns into a cacophony.
Just keep going.
Yeah, in this case, like, it's dampened a little bit, so like, when we first practiced here, like, I was like, the acoustics in my house are amazing!
Yeah, which is bad, because like, our old house in Welding Springs, our living room, we couldn't record in there.
Okay.
It was hardwood floors, cathedral ceiling.
Oh.
So if you just snapped your fingers, it would just pop.
Yeah, like, you could do like a chamber group if you're like recording on the opposite side of the room. Yeah. But like,
but yeah. Because I mean, if you played anything in there, it sounded like you were playing it into a metal pipe. Like it just, all over the place. It was nice. Yeah.
This is the 10 minutes in where we awkwardly look at each other and go, what do we talk about now?
Yeah. It's like just remembering communications classes. Dead air!
Yeah, exactly.
Dead air! Like, oh, shoot.
But it's fine because, you know, I can edit out dead air. It's fine. It's
we'll fix it in post.
It's the beauty of post.
Yeah. But you do have a tour coming up, so talk about that. Yeah.
So we're going on a little 4-day mini tour on April 27th through the 30th. We're going up and playing in Asheville at Artist Kitchen on the 27th, around, I guess the show starts probably around 8 or 9, with some Asheville bands, Crooked Ghost, and a few others who I'm not familiar with. We have only played Asheville once, and that's a whole other story.
Asheville's a whole other place.
Asheville is usually a whole other story.
Yeah, we played it. Well, we played at a hippie commune.
Oh, okay.
For people, we were. Okay. I think Shelby talked about.
For anyone who wants to hear this story, jump on
the
Southern Fried Ambition podcast with Shelby on it.
Yeah, she talked about Southern Fried Ambition. Then the next night, we're going up to Huntington, West Virginia, to play the Cricket Cave, which is a DIY space up there. And West Virginia is like my favorite place in the world to play right now. We've got a bunch of friends up there playing with our friends Quilt Monsters.
So there are good people up there.
There are amazing people in West Virginia. we played there on our first couple out of town gigs last summer. Where there's kind of a West Virginia Greenville pipeline in the punk scene. So we've got a lot of friends up there, and we'd never played there before, so we went up and it was amazing. One of still to this day one of the best shows we've ever played, and we get to see old friends and hang out and stuff.
Awesome.
And then we're doing Saturday in Richmond, Virginia at the Community Room with Madison Danielle Turner, Listless, Private Cry, and I think that's it. And that's Madison's a friend of ours, so I'm really excited to go see her. It's been a couple years, so to see her full band play and get to hang out and stuff. And then on the 30th, we're back in Greenville playing at the Radio Room. It's our EP release show. We're playing right now with Hugger Mugger and one more mystery band to be announced.
Ooh, mystery band.
So are you actually going to have physical CDs?
We are going to have physical CDs. Yeah, it's not just like, I finally just put the EP up on Bandcamp. It was like, all right, download it if you want it. Yeah, and
it's great.
Come get it.
I've had it for, I went through several listens on Bandcamp and I was like, I should just buy this. So I did. And you know, you got my however much, $7 or whatever it was.
Yeah, after like Bandcamp takes their cut and like the government takes their cut, it's like $5.14 or something that. So it's not bad.
No, it's fine.
It's like the one copy of an album that I actually sold on Bandcamp. They paid like $6 and it came out to $5 and I ended up just turning that $5 around and buying
another
album. Buying Heath's solo stuff, nice. Which is my guitar player.
My plan is just like, I'm a slut for free music anyway. Like, there's like a couple things on Bandcamp that I want to get. I'm like supposed to be kind of holding on to that money and be like, all right, this is going to be like string fund and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it takes like 5 days for PayPal to transfer to my bank account. So
yeah,
it's like, all right, well, I'll just leave it there.
It's string fund, but hey, I was gonna buy this album anyway, so I'll just do that.
Yeah,
just,
we'll borrow from Peter.
Here's the $5 for yeah. string fund. I swear that I'm putting over here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just need to buy stock in like Ernie Ball strings or something like that. I break so
many. Yeah. Well, yeah. Everybody does. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
If Amazon is a wonderful thing.
It is.
I once played in this band where you would think that they never broke a string, because every time I broke a string, it was like the end of the world. And it was also usually in the middle of practice, and we only had like one guitar for each person.
Yeah, yeah.
So like it was kind of like the end of practice at least. I'm like, I mean, I could just play.
Play around it.
Just, yeah, play around it. I just can't do leads. That's all. I can still play power chords and most open chords.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, this, you
sound
know, yeah, this major chord now just turned into, like, a diminished chord.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool, don't worry about it.
It's just open.
Adjust.
Because that's what you'd have to do in the middle of the show, so why not practice this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was because it was funny growing up playing music. It was always, like, every conductor I worked with was always, I value somebody who will just play through it. Than somebody who has to stop every time they mess up.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because there's a certain, you learn how to adapt and how to change on the fly, and okay, well, I've missed this. All right, now I'm going to pick back up and start playing again. You know, and it requires a little more musicianship, which kind of makes people who, you know, are conducting you or working with you a lot happier.
Because when it's halftime on the freaking football field, you got to keep going.
Damn right.
Not that you did that at all.
I didn't. I was in the locker room at halftime.
Sports, go sports.
I was go sportsing while my friends were tooting their horns.
Yeah, I was tooting the horn.
I was in theater and orchestra and writer society, and then I went to the boarding school. And
see, the way I didn't catch a lot of shit for being the guy violin player was because I played football. So without it, I'd have been in trouble.
Like, but, oh, I'm subverting your gender.
Joe's the good guy violin player. Yeah, but he's on the football team. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
He's good.
Yeah, I played viola. I started to try and do violin before I ended up stopping. But I played viola for 3 years. And so when I started playing guitar, I went from third chair to second chair. So, like, the frets made it clip. It's like, oh, that's why my fingers go there.
Yeah, you learn more on finger patterns and, oh, you know, this... For this particular scale or this particular key signature, I have to put this finger. Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Oh, that works transfers.
Switching over to reading treble clef from alto clef, a little different.
Because, I mean, alto clef is beautiful. It's right there. It's middle C, usually. Yep. I mean, it can move around.
Right,
but
it's
like,
C in the middle.
Yep,
you mean right that made-up clef in the middle that doesn't actually exist?
The B clef? Shut up. Don't pick on my B clef.
Sorry.
I started out as a viola player, so that's...
Very cool.
But then I was like, well, I want to play all the cool stuff.
Right? Like, yeah, there's no good melodies for viola.
No, there's
viola.
Not.
It's
there's
like...
Not. There's like nine viola concertos ever written. So I was like, I'm going to play some cooler stuff. I'm going to play violin.
And yeah, I wasn't even at the skill level where, like, you get into, like, some of the, like, Shostakovich stuff where there's, like, a little more comprehensive. And it's, like, if you're a nerd for, like... counterpoint and like the nuances of the way intervals work together, like
viola's
great if you're into those nuances.
It's like,
but
learning to play viola actually made me a better musician because I learned how to hear harmony instead of just it's funny because my wife was a soprano. She grew up a soprano. That's what she does. She hears melody fantastically. Harmony always messed with her because she never had to sing it. First soprano always sings the melody.
You know, how do you
First violin always plays the melody. Viola has to stick in the middle.
So I got a joke for you at the expense of your wife.
Please do.
How do you know that there's a soprano at the door?
I don't know.
She can't find the key and doesn't know where to come in.
Oh!
Yep.
Oh.
Hey. She would laugh at that because, yeah,
Because it's apropos.
Because it's both. Complete, yeah.
Both.
Both ways, yeah. And then I get a shut up.
Shut up.
Oh, man.
No, but it did. I mean, playing viola and learning how to fit into the group actually worked a lot better when you started doing other stuff.
Right.
And, like, when I switched from orchestra to doing choir stuff, it was a lot easier.
Okay.
You know, I sang first tenor. Again, I'm right in the middle. I'm just, cool, let's roll with that. Until it's time for Guide Ego stuff, and then, like, back up. Yeah. I've got this.
Now, did you carry that forward into your boy band days?
I did.
Oh,
yeah. I sang right in the middle harmony.
Okay.
It's beautiful. Which, actually, in the boy band type stuff...
You know, all traces of that boy band are gone from the internet.
It is.
Because every once in a while, I keep trying to find it.
So was this before, after, or during the boy band?
This was college. Okay. My best friend in college loved boy bands. God bless him. He just liked NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys. So one year for a talent show, we decided as a joke to form a boy band and do the school talent show. And we won because it was five music majors and we wrote everything out and it was good. And yeah.
But that doesn't mean you have to record it and release it online. And
you know, I was actually, all I did for those recordings was write. I did not record. I wrote for that album and I wrote for his solo album that he did later, which now is a huge joke because, no, when my buddy Mike did his solo record, he went through, actually, Zach, who was the same person who recorded the group album.
Oh, yeah.
And so we did the writing, recorded it, everything was good. Mm-hmm. Like, 7 years later, Zach works with, like, Sam Hunt. Like, he's a Grammy-nominated producer. But wow. He produced our two little bullshit records, like, 10 years ago.
Because he learned how to deal with crap.
Yes! He learned how to polish a turd. And then so later, he knows how to work with good stuff.
It's like, oh, I could really polish this.
Yeah. Oh, I've got multi-million dollar studio equipment. Got this.
Yeah.
Got this.
But no, but like we recorded two records in like his bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, in his like bedroom studio. But yeah, now he's like Grammy nominated. So good for him.
Hell yeah.
And he's still a good dude. Like, we could still just text him and be like, hey, man, what you doing?
Yeah, and I know that studio recording still has advantages, but at this point, it's really easy just to record your own stuff.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
Out of the studio, but...
For sure.
You
know. No, I mean, and that was the thing. Like, when I was in college, we had to, like, that was back in the days, we still had to find studio time.
Yeah.
Where it was, hey, like... Like, well, my firm worked at a place called 8 Mile Records in Charleston, or 6 Mile Records in Charleston. And it was one of those things where he worked there, and he was like, all right, man, the last band leaves at 11. They said we could stay here till 2. Like, just get here, and we'll try to record something. Yeah, just knock some stuff out.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I see Shelby went down to Columbia this past weekend and knocked out a Cherry Icy's album in the studio, and I'm like, awesome. But at the same time, I'm like, did you have to go to the studio? But I guess it's a controlled environment, and it has all of your noise canceling and all that.
Yeah.
Everything's the other built cool in thing, there. I mean, like, I would love to be able to do home recording because that's DIY and that's kind of the goal there. But the studios we've gone to have always, like, so the stuff Shelby did, like, is the Jam Room, which have a really good reputation. They're commonly considered, like, to be the best studio in South Carolina. And they've just got so much gear that you wouldn't normally have access to.
Right.
From amps, guitars, effects pedals.
They have experience with the mastering also, which is something that takes years to
really get
to
the nuance. And so I always thought that was really cool. When I was in high school, I had a friend whose older brother's band was recording a lot of stuff. So I spent a lot of time just hanging out around Sit and Spin Records back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just really cool to get sit there. I mean, you know, we'd watch them play, and in between we'd get to jam around a little bit and play very badly. And mostly just sit and play the free arcade game up front.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
You know, sit there while they're all, like, doing the things that, like, people in their mid-20s do that blow teenagers' minds. I'm like, I'm really surprised my parents let me hang out with these people, too. Like,
but, you know, at the same time, parents can see the benefits and things that we don't necessarily give parents credit for seeing.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my stepdad was like, just don't do any heroin or anything, okay? And I was like, all right.
Okay, so no super hard drugs.
Yes. Yeah, right. Okay. I was like, so does that mean, like, no, I was a really well-behaved high schooler. I was...
Yeah.
I guess I was. I wasn't really misbehaving until college.
Well, that's nice.
My misbehaving was, like, kept... It was honestly, like, looking back was really tame, but I never got... My parents would have got mad at me, but I always kept it super DL.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And my middle brother was in so much trouble that he took the fall for all of it. And then...
Had a heat seeker, so you're just like, you just...
Yeah.
I'm gonna go here and do my thing.
Yeah, and so I remember being, like, I think I was, like, 20, and I was living with my parents again, and I told my mom, I was like, so... Some of that was, like, not... my brother, and she's like, are you kidding? You let him take the fall for this for all this time? I'm like,
uh-huh.
I mean, we're adults now.
Are you trying to teach me that I shouldn't come clean now? Because that's what I'm getting out of this.
Yeah.
Well, I had an older sister, and you know, as we were coming up, there were always firm rules on you'll have to be 16 when you date and blah, blah, blah. And my older sister blew through all of the hard, fast rules. Yeah. And I didn't have to worry about a single one of them.
Nice.
So, yeah. So that worked out well for me.
See, I was raised by my grandparents. And so, like, my mom rebelled really hardcore. She went out and got, you know, got in trouble. And, you know, she got pregnant with me at 17 and whatever. And so, like, coming up, it was like, you're not doing anything, obviously terrible? Go.
Okay.
Go you. Like, go have fun. Like, I think, like, the one time I really got in trouble. I think the one time I really got in trouble was at 16. Me and my friend, like, my best friend at the time, we tried to pull, like, the old, like, you say you're staying over at my house, I'll say I'm staying over at your house gimmick. And we took, my 96 Geo Metro to Atlanta using fake IDs to the Tabernacle to see Pantera. And we got in so much trouble. Like, my phone rang, like, my cell phone rang, like, right as I got in the door, and I'm like, no.
So when I was 16, I pulled one of those stunts, and I had just gotten back from vacation. I just turned 16, and somehow we'd gotten our hands on, like, a bottle of 99 oranges, like the really gross orange schnapps, and then we had some other liquor at my friend's house. And so, like, I was going to go stay the night there because I had a couple nights before school, went back, and so my mom catches me, like, snagging the orange juice out of the fridge and goes, "What's that for?" I was like, "Breakfast?" Because they don't have orange juice over at Nick's. I was like, no. Like, totally, like, at the time, I was like, I am so slick.
I'm the worst, like, liar, yeah.
And so we go over there, and I end up, like, just, like, getting, I ended up with alcohol poisoning. By the end of the night, like, so we started in my friend's room, and then their older brother came and was like, "What the hell are you two doing? You're gonna wake up mom and dad. Come down to the basement room," which was completely separate from the house.
Yeah.
So we go down there, and we killed both of those bottles. I mean, we're, like, maybe, like, 200-pound kids, like, killing, like, considerable, like, dangerous amounts of liquor. And so I stand up to go outside and pee, because we couldn't go back in the house. The house was locked up. There was no going in. So I was just going to go outside, like, it's a building, whatever. And I get up, and I stand up, and I charge headfirst into this brick wall. And then I go kind of lean up against the door frame and kind of start to, like, shimmy down, and then I just fall forward. They, like, drag me in. I start throwing up everywhere.
Oh,
like,
lovely. Yeah.
It was, the next morning, like, I told my mom I'd be home by, like, 11, and, like, 4 o'clock the next afternoon, she shows up at their house and was like, "So, how was your night last night?" And I was like, "I don't want to talk about it." She's like, "Neither do I. We'll talk later. Go up to your room. I'll bring you some Gatorade. Sleep." So I was out of school for 2 days, actually. She's like, "Yeah, I probably should bring you to the hospital, but I think you've made it this far. You're going to be fine. Now you just get to suffer through it."
Fun. And going back to the music, it's that kind of experience, is the kind of flavor, the folk, you know, feel of it, the folk slash punk feel of the music.
Yeah.
And you get the local flavor. You get little tidbits of 385 and Charleston and so you get the local callbacks and stuff that
We have a song that's not on this EP. It's going to be on the next one, called Mosquito City, that is about, it references the Reedy River and the culture of downtown and the way that sort of gentrification is sucking the blood out of this region. How I think the line is, "Down in the reeds someone is sick but the city keeps dancing." And depending on the context, you typically go like, "Yeah, we're dancing despite..." No, you're dancing while someone's dying down here. Yeah. Like, get your priorities straight.
Yeah, and I believe that was on the WSBF.
Yeah, we did put that on the WSBF section. Yeah. And, like, but yeah, there's definitely the kind of hot mess aspect definitely comes through in the lyrics. I mean, I've spent a really long time, being a mess of a human being. And
so, we all have in certain ways.
Everybody feels like they're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're all just sort of bullshitting and faking our way through it. Yeah. Totally get it. But no, it's because it's funny. I've got one of my college friends is moving up here, and he's like, "Well, how is Greenville?" I said, "Well, Greenville is kind of what Charleston was in like 2006. Like, the old city's going away. They're building just new shit everywhere. Downtown is almost, like, impossible to go to now, but it's still sort of doable for the next couple years. But it's going to get to a point where, like, you can't go downtown."
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's going to be too busy and too new, and there's too many condos and too much bullshit.
And they're starting on Greer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're starting to push some of the new... Well, some of the stuff that got pushed out of downtown Greenville is showing up in Greer.
Yeah, Blue Ridge, yeah, Blue Ridge is over there, yeah.
Yeah, so Greer is starting to build up around, you know, and kind of have the old feel of the old downtown.
Yeah.
There was the Casbah in Greer, so funny enough, I played a gig there one night. Mm-hmm. And if you know, you've been there, it's this like little tapas and like kind of nicer restaurant.
Yeah.
And I just moved back from Colorado. I was still doing like the crusty punk, mostly staying in my car and busking all the time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Playing a lot of like songs like I am now. One of them I wrote, Gaster Schwann actually wrote back then.
Okay.
About like, just drinking and nihilism and drugs and fuck the government, fuck religion, all this stuff. And, you know, Greer's kind of old South money or, you know, New South poverty. And so we played this venue, this kid who mostly was into like kind of the nicer folk stuff hooked me up with this show.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted me to go first while they were still doing dinner service.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I mean, I'm already like,
because you got to open, you can't be the headliner.
Yeah, so I'm already like a 40 and a half in. I'm like, okay. So I was like, are you sure? Have you heard my music? You'll be fine.
Okay.
So like blue and pink hair, like dirty as hell. I get up in front of all these like super like well-dressed, you know, yeah, appearing to
people
be...
having dinner.
Like, yeah, like dinner at a pretty nice restaurant, you know, on the roof. And like, I destroyed that ambience. I mean, I sang a bunch of Johnny Hobo covers. I'm just like screaming essentially. Like, my voice was way rougher then than it is now. And like they all very politely clapped and like stood there and like were like,
You got some of that fake Southern politeness.
Yeah, just like, and smiling, and it, like, of course, immediately got out of there right after we played. We all climbed back into my car. We're like, all right, let's drive back to Greenville.
Yeah. The most awkward punk show I've ever been to. I was in Japan for 4.5 years, and I went to a punk show. And most of the little venues are just open, you know, no seats or anything. You know, and go into this place, and it's friggin' high tables and stools like bolted to the floor, and there's a punk show, and it's like, okay, so I have to sit down? How does this work?
Yeah. At Fellow, so they usually do, if you've been there in downtown, they usually do like kind of more folksy shows and like DJ
sets.
They got
their new stage and like their new space though. Have you been?
I haven't been. I went like a couple months ago.
They just added, I guess they bought like the space next to them.
Oh, cool.
But
oh,
now nice. It opens up where, I mean, you could legit get like 100, 120 people in there.
That's
got
cool.
A stage. It worked for anything from like comedy to a poetry slam to you know, any kind of band could get up there. Like,
cool,
the stage is about the size of the room.
This time, this is still when, you know, the band played like by
in
the
corner.
Yeah,
and it was, so the band that night happened to be Baby Baby, and I'd never seen them before. A friend of mine was like, they're amazing, they're this like party rock band, you're gonna love them. So we go, and you know, we go and we have our drinks and stuff, and by the time we get there, the guitar player has already broken like a string on one of his guitars. So he brings out the second guitar, and he's playing like this small little like writhing pit starts, and like people are push moshing and like getting pretty wild, and then Tez breaks another string, and it's just like, I'm gonna keep playing. He's like, you know, they told us that we couldn't get too rowdy tonight, but we're seeing y'all out there, we're just gonna keep going. And then I like screamed like, and we can see you tomorrow night at Radio Room if they shut you down. Like, yeah, she's got the right idea. And so that was a blast of a show. That was really weird, because every other time I've been to Velo, it's always been like
it's super chill.
It's a lot of yuppies and like a DJ sets, which is cool. Like, it's an actual DJ there. He's got like a turntable and stuff, so that's kind of cool. And like folk acts, which is cool. I like folk music. Just
I mean, Velo's, it's definitely a good, I hope that's not one of the places that gets pushed out as everything gets more expensive down.
No, I think it's really popular.
It's one of the ones that pushed in.
Yeah, I think it is. Definitely Bella was one of the push in.
Because I was trying to explain it to my wife, because me and Alex went there a couple weeks ago, and she was like, what is that place? I'm like, it's sort of the most Asheville place downtown. Like, it is, it's got that kind of...
Well, what I miss is, so, I mean, I'm sure you guys remember, so back, like, where the Verizon store is, and, like, at Piazza Bergamo now, there used to be Loose Lucy's in Uptown Downtown, which were super cool, and, like, so I really miss Uptown Downtown, and the upstairs at Loose Lucy's. Like, those were both, like, you know, they had like bondage fashion and some punk fashion, mm-hmm. some old, like, if you remember, like Emily the Strange stuff, which is really hard to find now. And
right. And all that stuff has been priced out of downtown at this point because the rent has gone up so high.
Yeah. And like there was a clothing warehouse and it's now another fashion boutique, but it's mm-hmm. like completely different. Like, clothing warehouse was all this like awesome vintage stuff.
Yeah.
And eventually I remember I had a friend who worked there and we walked in, like when I was at boarding school, I was at Governor's School, we used to go down there and hang out all the time. And then I remember my senior year, he's like, yep, we're not going to be here next year. I was like, seriously? He's like, yeah, we've got maybe like a year, year and a half left. And then we're going to be, our doors are going to be closed. We're not going to be able to make it.
Yeah. It's like where Governor's School is now, when, you know, in the 90s, it was Zoo's Rough.
You couldn't go down there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I moved here.
Falls Park was no joke. That was where the freaking druggies and...
Yeah, that's where the gang violence
pimps hung out.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, because you had the Camperdown Bridge that went over there, and then the river was disgusting, and then, like, you just had what eventually became the Swamp Rabbit Trail that led you through. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, I remember walking by the river... And like under the Camperdown Bridge when I was like 9-10 years old from the zoo with my family, and we did not go there like after dark.
Exactly.
Like, it was you go there during the day when it's nice and then you leave as soon as the sun goes down.
Yep. So it's been, they've turned it around, but for good and bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I remember because I went to Governor's School, the summer program there. And
so you had Dr. Hamilton was the horn teacher and the head of the department. Did you have, let's see.
I was in, I don't remember. This was 16 years ago.
Yeah, that there.
But yeah, they've, because my dad was driving down, he's like, this place is in the really bad side, like, bad part of town. I was like, yeah.
Well, they're turning it around.
Yeah, and then, like, in, I think, 2001, they finished the campus.
Yeah,
it is now.
Yeah, because I was there the first summer that they did it.
My poetry teacher when I was there, she went to the summer program before there was a school. That was really cool. I mean, that's kind of a neat part of being downtown is, like, the fact that there are all these, like, arts kids that are now essentially being pulled there, and, like, it's overall a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's visiting, and all sorts of weird things are happening.
Yeah, yeah, we're oddly a tourist destination now.
Which blows my mind.
And it's food tourism, too, which is, like, the bougiest form of tourism.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Food tourism, and hey, there's a walking bridge. Okay.
Let's do it.
There's a walking bridge and a bike trail. Let's go there.
So exciting.
Really.
Everything is really cheap. Oh, yeah, sold.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it is. It's you can like go on vacation without paying like Charleston prices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can still get a little bit of that Charleston
niceness. There are mountains.
There are mountains.
Yeah.
Very close.
There is stuff you can do, but...
Come to dive bar punk shows. Like,
yeah.
Awesome. That I'd be in for that, you know.
Right?
And really the only thing we don't have anymore is like a mid-sized venue.
Yeah.
Once Handlebar closed down, nothing ever really took its place.
And my thing is, maybe it's because of my age, but like when I went, all the times I went to Handlebar, I was in high school, and I was either going with my parents who were cool enough to like be like, okay, yeah, you want to get tickets for the show, it's your birthday, or you've got a little money, like, okay, we can do this, like, you know, in the summer job money, they'd be like, all right, we'll bring you the show, and like, it was usually my stepdad, and he'd just sit in the bar and drink, and while I sat there, or it was when, so that friend's band, they played a couple shows at Handlebar, and we would hang out backstage with them, and we would load their gear. Their excuse was we were their roadies, which was just our excuse to get in the bar. So, like, I never really, like, was blown away by any of the bands that played there. I mean, there were a couple locals that were really cool. And, like, I mean, Against Me played there, which was, would be really cool to have Against Me, but play in a venue here. But, I mean,
towards the end there, it got to where if it wasn't a huge band, it, you know, Athens bands would come through. And we went and saw Modern Skirts there, you know, it was like on a Thursday or something, but, you know, the Athens band had come through and we go in and it's like us and three other people. I was like,
I mean, like Montreal played in a couple of years ago, like one of the last shows there, and I missed that, which was a bummer because I love Montreal, but it's like, and it's already booked there, and they didn't really, I didn't feel like they really supported at least a lot of the local talent that I'm into. You know, I think a lot of like the southern metal-y bands that are like real popular with the Ground Zero scene could get shows there because they already had that fan base.
Right.
But, and you get more casual listeners out there because it's more immediately accessible than like some of the bands I've played in that I'm a fan of that are either heavier or noisier or just weird. And So that's why I like, and also I can't do big shows. Like, I want to go see Brand New and Manchester Orchestra.
Awesome.
With my ex-girlfriend up at Raleigh, Raleigh's big Verizon Amphitheater, whatever it is, for her birthday. And one, I learned three things at the show. One is I can't do huge crowds. Mm-hmm. Two, I'm apparently willing to pay $12 for a Jack Daniels and Pepsi, and I hate Pepsi.
Okay.
And also, if you ever go to a show at that venue, don't bother buying tickets. Go to the parking garage across the street, park on the top, fill your trunk with your poison of choice, and just sit up there and watch the show, because you can see and hear everything fine.
Awesome. Actually, going back to the Southern Fried Ambition that I did with Shelby, one of the influences that I threw out there that kind of jumped out at me, and it's just a weird phrasing thing, was Manchester Orchestra.
Yeah, I've never really been into Manchester Orchestra, to be honest. I have a lot of friends who are super into
them. I love that band.
Well, they're kind of that like post-hardcore, post-punk kind of thing that was really big in like the mid-early 2000s, which is adjacent to a lot of the stuff that I listen to and is influenced by a lot of the stuff that I'm influenced by.
Yeah.
American football and like a little bit of that kind of like post-rocky math rock stuff too.
Yeah.
And I like them, but it's just they were never one who I was super into. I went to see Brand New because Brand New were pretty cool. Deja Entendu was a big album for me when I was like 13, and so
that's what I was about to say. It was freshman, easier freshman or sophomore year of college.
Yeah, so like you know, I think you got like a little almost 10 years on me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like
don't look at me.
Yeah, right. He's older than I am. So.
That album was so it's there's something really surreal and disturbing and funny about seeing a crowd full of people where the average age is 28 singing "I wanna be 18 forever." Like, and it's just that was this moment where I was like, I don't think I'm as into this band as I used to be because I feel really scared, like. Because, you know, most of the people in there are my age are a little bit older, so it was we're just like, okay.
Which was funny, because remember, we went to
Summer Nationals mm-hmm. with
which was, it was Offspring, Bad Religion,
Pennywise. Some older punk bands,
And it was literally, up until Offspring came on stage, like, I was young for that crowd.
Yeah.
Like, it was mostly guys in their 40s, late 30s. And I was like, wow, like, we're all still going to shows at our age.
And it was like, this is awesome. And then Offspring comes up, and suddenly
there's this rush of teenagers.
Suddenly, it's all 12-year-olds in front of us. But probably weren't 12, but they looked 12.
Right. They weren't. A lot of them weren't as old as the Smash album that they were playing.
Yeah. And they
like
were just,
that was the gimmick of that whole show. Was Offspring.
Oh, they played Smash.
They played Smash front to back.
Oh, that was
which was cool.
Really fucking cool.
But we left halfway because it's like they're just playing Smash.
Yeah.
There's Americana in there, which is like, see, Americana was one of the first albums that I ever, like, that was punk, quote unquote, that I really got into. Even though it's actually a pretty diverse album, it's got some weirdish kind of dubby songs on there and stuff. But yeah, and my mom, of course, was
it's
like
entry-level punk.
Yeah, and I, for like 8 years old, like, of course, I borrow my...
It would be
my...
what, like, Green Day's Dookie was to me at, like, 11, 12
and
years
so
old.
So I bring the CD home, and my mom, I play it, my mom hears it, and, like, she's just like, what the... No! Like, whoever says you bring it back to them. And, like, we eventually dumped... My brother and I dumpster-dived a copy, and we got, like, Blink-182's Enema of State in there as well.
Nice.
And, like, I think there was, like, a Papa Roach album in there, which very quickly turned into a Frisbee. But, I was like that. I mean, the first album I ever bought with my money was Blink-182's Untitled album. I think it was 12. But it's their one that's not, like, immature pop-punk. It's the one that, like, has Robert Smith on it from The Cure.
Yeah.
So it's, like, really weird and cool and spacey while still being a little tongue-in-cheek. And,
right.
Like, that and American Idiot, I think, were the first two, like, quote-unquote,
yeah,
like...
I was definitely...
My first album I bought, I was Like a Virgin by Madonna.
Hell
on
yeah.
Vinyl.
Nice.
Fuck yeah.
I think the first album I bought was either Dookie or it was like an Aerosmith's Greatest Hits album. It was something like, I was just trying to like get into, like break away from like the country that my grandfather listened to like, I'm going to listen to my own music. But yeah, I remember specifically buying Dookie and my grandmother saw it and she was like, what is this? Like, this isn't appropriate. Like, it's called Dookie. I'm like, Dookie's not a swear word. I say Dookie all the time. She's like,
well,
I guess
well, you
okay.
Gotta stop.
I remember I was probably like 12 or 13 and my stepdad gave me his copy of Paranoid by Black Sabbath. So that was really cool because he mostly listens to like bluegrass and like jam bands and like old folk stuff and country, but once in a while, like, he would throw that on or some Zappa. He's also a diehard Zappa fan.
Okay,
nice. So he'd play that. Yeah, one of my fondest memories of childhood is listening to Frank Zappa, and he would play, like, once in a while when it would get to Bobby Brown Goes Down. At the end of that last verse, I never knew the rest of the words because I got a cheerleader here to help me write my paper, make her do all the work. Ken, turn that shit off! And so that was like, that was how I thought the lyrics went for the first, like, you know, 20 years of my life. I was like, oh, there's more to this than that. Okay.
Oh, there's a part I'm not supposed to hear.
You have to look this up.
Yeah, but that was back when bands did, like, secret tracks at the ends of records.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you had to, wait, no, just keep listening.
You had to sit through 20 minutes of silence.
Yeah, some weird, like, yeah, like, yeah. 13 tracks of silence of, like, nothing, and then it's...
But most of them did, the last track was just, like, 30 minutes long.
Right.
20 minutes of it was silence.
See, I just thought they were doing multiple covers of John Cage's 4 minutes, 33 seconds.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
that's what I figured. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
Nine Inch Nails, Broken... was like the first one that made it 99 tracks.
Yeah.
It was like 5 tracks and then 98 and 99.
Yeah.
So it would actually count the tracks. So you could skip, but you might as well just sit there.
Right, yeah. You're going to just wear out the skip button.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas Nirvana, you had the 30 minutes before Endless Nameless.
This was a good old
days. That was the first major one that really had the hidden track at the end was Nevermind.
So are you both from Greenville? And you said you lived in Boiling Springs, and you're talking Spartanburg.
Yeah, okay. I'm from Spartanburg. I went to college in Charleston, and then moved back when I realized probably not going to be able to afford a house down here.
Yeah. I'm basically from Easley from third grade on, Pennsylvania before that, so.
All right, so are there any bands that were around here that you guys miss? Like, that were bands either, like, in South Carolina, like, statewide, maybe North Carolina, who, like, played around here?
I never actually got into the local scene here growing up. I never got out to live shows. I didn't have that freedom, I guess. My punk show days were, I went into the Marine Corps out of high school and ended up going to Japan for 4.5 years, and I got into the ska punk community in Okinawa.
There's ska punk.
Oh yeah.
Big in Japan.
Well, that was when ska punk was hitting.
Like third wave, okay.
Yeah, that was third wave hitting, and there's, yeah.
I guess like Melt Banana and the Boredoms would have been kind of active around that time period, or like starting out getting active.
Yeah. So there's, yeah. Like Rude Bones was one that hit over in the U.S. and Mongol 800's awesome, but you know they never made it out of Japan. I was over there for that, and Puffy Ami Yumi was a good pop band that I was into while I was there. They just did a small tour of the U.S. and they were too far away.
Yeah, they did. Like they had a TV show too, that like cartoon that was like based on their music and art.
Hi, Puffy Ami Yumi. Yes,
yeah, that was really cool. Like.
They were called Puffy, you know, when they, in Japan they're called Puffy, but, you know, but Puff Daddy came out at about the same time.
Yeah.
So they had to, when they came to the U.S., it had to be Puffy Ami Yumi. So.
But yeah. No, I mean, for me, like, there was a local band called Albert Hill that was really big when I was growing up. It was sort of like southern, like, college rock.
Okay.
It was sort of in that, like, mid-90s sort of. Like Evan McCain, who did the Blowfish thing, but they were really good guys, and they all still live in Spartanburg. And
oh, cool!
The guitar player was my guitar teacher growing up,
okay.
So like he'd always like get me into some of the shows down at like Magnolia Street Pub and
okay,
the little small venues in Spartanburg.
When my first guitar teacher was primarily a bluegrass musician.
Nice.
So tried to teach me. Started with open chords, like most when you start playing guitar, but then started teaching me the scales that go in between them.
Right.
That you can do all in the same position without having to move your hand much. So that was a big thing. And then I went to this was like this clash rock and roll classic rock guitarist who did jazz gigs on the side. Who's then suddenly I'm learning like all these 90s rock covers, Nirvana, and like
that's all I wanted to learn growing up. I was like, well, teach me this Metallica song. Okay. Sweet.
I did I was like some Nirvana songs, some Green Day songs, And then, like, a couple, like, folk songs that my parents liked that I did for them, wanted to learn how to play for them.
Yeah.
And then he's like, all right, we need to start teaching you, like, scales and stuff. Like, if you want to stick with this. And I'm like, oh, we just so happen to not be able to afford lessons anymore. Bye!
Bye. I can play songs now. I don't need scales.
Who needs scales?
Yeah, I'm still really bad with scales. Like, I went backwards with, like, music theory, so I learned my chord theory and have been going backwards and learning the scales surrounding them first. Like, I learned all about intervals and stuff, but I, for whatever reason, having little hands doing scale patterns was always a pain in the butt for me. I learned major and minor, yeah, and then
for the same reason my wife hates like playing piano is that she can't reach an octave.
Oh,
so yeah, I can't get
she
an
has
octave.
To sort of like tap over to an octave, and I'm like, what? Oh, look, I just hit a ninth.
Yeah. But
I hate you. I hate piano. So, or even.
Yeah, like, I tried so hard to learn to play piano. Keyboard. Like, I have a keyboard, and I tried so hard to learn, and I put a bunch of hours in, and
see, where
just
where I got screwed
cave.
Up was, you know, growing up playing the viola and the violin, my left hand did all the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
My right hand just kept time. Mm-hmm. So when I went to play the piano, it's fucking backwards.
Yep.
So I'm like, dude, if I could string this son of a bitch the other way, I'll play it all day. Like, but right
yep.
now, my dumb hand, you expect way too much from it.
Well, yeah. on the trombone, the heavy lifting is literally holding.
Yeah, it's holding.
So yes, my left hand did the heavy lifting, but you know, I was tuning here.
Yeah.
So that's my background.
If you still have a trombone, we need to start a ska project.
Yeah. There's one in the garage. It just I'm way out of practice.
We tried so hard in college, like for my college school of music, to get a ska band going. Because where are you going to have that many trumpet, saxophonists, and trumpets?
Yeah, like that's
literally at hand on all times.
That's you why know? Most of them come out of that
right. college town. Yeah.
Right. And so, like, we tried, and we would get like the big practice room, and we'd get in there and just jam around, but we could never just like get booked and try to get out there. And then some of them went off to other schools and it just never got off the ground. And I wish we would have, because we were like, when we really got together and started playing stuff, we were great, but it just never.
Do you remember
clicked.
Like 10 years ago there was like a like third wave style ska band from Charleston called Maladroit or the Maladroit Mafia? Did you ever see them?
I never saw them. I've heard the name. Yeah.
Yeah, they were fun. We used to see them. They played at skate park in Greenville. Mostly had like metalcore and hardcore and like straight edge stuff. And these like, you know, seven like dudes from Columbia would come up and play ska, which always went over oddly. And so one time
it shouldn't have
skate
park. Skate
yeah,
park
but
skate park.
It's what you it do was, at skate park.
It was all there for like it was all the like tough guy bro
yeah.
core guys there.
Yeah.
And so finally at one of the nights they're just like, you guys want a mosh? And so like four of them break out Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit. And like it's the most like ironic. It
yeah.
was hysterical.
We're making fun of you, but you're dancing to it, so whatever. Like
no, yeah, they threw in the breakdown too at the end
nice.
Of it, like the chugga chugga scree thing, which was hysterical. Like just like chuck, 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 scree.
And they play Thank You for Not Moshing by,
yeah.
by Real Big Fish.
Real Big
Fish. Well, they had a song called Skanking in the Pit about skanking at metal shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
which, by the way, it is a Sky Year on Warped Tour if you're interested. I think Save Ferris is going to be there.
You have Big D are going to be playing?
Big D is going to be there in Charlotte.
But
not in Atlanta, but in Charlotte.
But big crowds.
Right? Like,
dude,
$12 drinks.
But Gwar is headlining.
That's not
who?
Ska.
Gwar.
Oh, my God.
Gwar, it's a fun show. Like, you just go and go see some stupid shit.
I listened to a lot of Gwar when I lived in Colorado because my roommate grew up, like, hanging out with, like, the guys from Avail, like, being one of the kids who, like, lurks on their porch. And, like, Dave Brocky is
yeah.
from Richmond.
Yeah.
So he used to, like, they had this, like, art collective there with the guys from Municipal Waste, too. And they would do, like, these, like, funny videos and stuff. And my roommate at the time, Spencer, used to be one of the high schoolers who would lurk
around
and hang around. And so, like, he played a lot of Gwar and a lot of Municipal Waste and just destroyed it for me. Just because, like, I liked them going in, but when it's, like, I was like, hey, let's listen to, like, something else.
Maybe.
To me, like, once a year, it's a nice experience.
Yeah.
Like, you just go and
covered
see some
in
crazy
fake
stuff.
Blood.
Yeah. Right.
You
like,
know.
You know they're going to play last. So, you know, I'm already sweaty and I smell like beer anyway. So just fuck it. Ruin the
just,
I'm good.
I guess we should probably wrap up there.
I guess
so.
You
know, schedules and stuff.
Yeah.
So, this is the time for shameless self-promotion, and we'll kick it to you.
All right, shameless self-promotion
so much
time.
To promote.
You can download our new EP, How to Date a Severed Head, at horriblegirl.bandcamp.com. It's for all you queer weirdo babies, as well as anyone who likes obnoxious, silly music.
Now, are you going to keep it just on Bandcamp, or are you going to
distribute? We do have CDs. We're looking for distribution, so if you run an indie label and are non-committal when it comes to like signing things, then hit me up at horriblegirl.bandcamp.com.
Or on the Facebook page.
Yeah, or on the Facebook page, Horrible Girl in the Hot Mess. And come see us on the 30th, or if you live anywhere in those cities I mentioned earlier in the episode, come hang out and be my friend. It'd be really cool.
And I am at Woodle on the Twitter and the Instagram, and
I'm that Joe You Know on Instagram. I'm the Joe You Know on Twitter, and I've quit fucking it up.
Yay!
I've been doing this for like 2.5 years.
And I'd give my Instagram, but it's like Horrible Girl with a zero, and like the girl doesn't have an I in it, and there's way too many R's, but like hit me up and I'll give it to you if you want to see it.
You might be able to find it.
It's mostly just pictures of my cats and selfies, but
my Instagram is nothing but dog pictures. Like, I totally get it.
So many cat pictures everywhere. I mean, that is really like, if I could like get paid in cat pictures, that would be cool. I shouldn't say that.
And, you're going to get so many bookings, I'll give you like 9 cat pictures.
Yeah, nice. Oh shit, bro.
So how many counts of gas do I get for 9 cat pictures?
Yeah, turns out cat pictures, not currency.
In some states.
In some, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll be jumping off of Kubo and the Two Strings, which is now on Netflix next
Sweet.
Time.
Yes! That movie's amazing.
I love that movie.
Epic level bard. Like, easily, exactly. Like, epic level bard. Like, that perform check, like, 20s every time.
Yeah. And we'll talk at you next time.
Pop!
Tear down.